Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, March 26th. And for now, the biggest success, but also the saddest story around the Detroit Pistons. For those, you have to look to Grand Rapids. And this is your boy, Matt Shook, the host and an AP freelancer out in Chicago covering the NBA. Also been a Pistons follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter across these United States and into the Caribbean islands as well for over a decade too. Today we're going to be talking about the scary situation and give the latest update on Zeke Upshaw, a member of the Grand Rapids Drive, who collapsed on the court on Saturday night in the team's final game of the regular season. He was actually eulogized by some on Twitter on Sunday afternoon, prematurely as it turns out. And as we tape this on Monday early morning, the word that late from Grand Rapids on Sunday night is that he was still fighting for his life in the hospital. We're also going to be talking to Joe Sinke, a writer for Palace of Pistons, the blog, and he's also a podcaster. He was at the game in Grand Rapids on Saturday night. We're also going to be talking about him about that, the drive in general, and also he's a very active member on Pistons Reddit, so we're going to be talking about that if fans out there want to get into a deeper dive into the Detroit Pistons organization. But the Pistons did win on Saturday night, so we're going to be talking about that against the Chicago Bulls and looking ahead to the LA Lakers game, which is tonight in Detroit at the end of the show. But first, big congrats. It's the kind of the state of champions this past weekend for Michigan, state of Michigan basketball. First of all, those Ferris State Bulldogs, the Division II men national champions after beating Northern State from South Dakota on Saturday in a tight one. I'm sure they were partying in Big Rapids all weekend. Somehow the Grand Valley State Lakers, despite going to the Final Four a couple times and always being ranked near the top of the Division II rankings over the years, have never gotten that title. And the Bulldogs are the first team from Michigan to win it all in Division II. And also huge congrats to the high school state champions. The boys basketball teams decided the state championships over the weekend at the Breslin Center in East Lansing. Class A, Clarkston High School, as Michigan State-bound Forrest Lawyer, who was also named Mr. Basketball of Michigan recently, he dropped 40 points on Holland West Ottawa in the finals, lifting Dan Fife to the championship there. Coach, the legendary coach, Dan Fife, obviously. Class B, Benton Harbor, got the title after beating Grand Rapids Catholic Central in overtime. And then in Class C, it was Detroit Edison, PSA, equaled the girls' team by winning the state championship, so a double for the Edison folks. And then Class D, it was Southfield Christian that got the title in that division. And, of course, the big highlight for Michigan basketball fans was the University of Michigan. The Wolverines got big wins over Texas A&M and then Florida State in the regionals. And now we'll play Sister Jean and the Loyola Ramblers on Saturday in San Antonio, the Missouri Valley Conference Cinderella story upstarts from the city of Chicago. Rogers Park is the neighborhood. I've been to a game out there, so I'll take some credit for that victory for Loyola over the past few weeks. Kansas and Villanova lurking in the other half of the Final Four bracket as well, a couple of number one seeds, so a big weekend ahead in college basketball. Final Four weekend, one of my favorites of the calendar year, and not just in sports, but in life. It's always been a fun weekend. The weather's starting to turn a little bit, so you know here in the Midwest that it's going to be a nice spring and then hopefully a nice summer as well. But I want to tell you guys again about Ash Supply Company. I've been drinking their coffee every day for a few weeks. I got beans from Burundi, Kenya, and Guatemala on my first shipment. Ash Supply Company, it's a Detroit business that's growing in the heart of the Motor City. It's the coffee that is driving Detroit's renaissance. And it's not just coffee with these dudes. It's a lifestyle. My guys, Mike and AJ, they built this company from the ground up. Wayne State Warriors, and I've known these guys for a long time. And I've given them this coffee as gifts to serious and satisfied coffee fans. These guys got two locations in Detroit that you should visit, and their coffee is available at retailers all over the Metro Detroit area. Of course, we got Goddess and the Baker here in downtown Chicago as well, has Ash Supply Company coffee there too. But Locked On Pistons is giving you a great offer for coffee to come to you monthly. Visit ashsupplycompany.com, that's A-S-H-E, supplyco.com, and use promo code LOCKED at checkout for 20% off one of Ash Supply Company's subscription plans. Make your choice between subscription. They got the Roaster's Choice Single Origin, featuring offerings from Latin America, East Africa, or the Pacific Islands. You got the Three Roast Sampler, 3 6-ounce samplers from different regions around the world. Or the Drink Coffee Live Wild subscription, which features a Roaster's Choice 12-ounce bag along with a carefully curated coffee-inspired accessory, either a t-shirt, coffee-infused candle, or coffee-infused soap. These guys are supporting the Lockdown Pistons podcast, so you should support them. Again, go to ashsupplycompany.com, A-S-H-E, supplyco.com, and use promo code LOCKED at checkout for 20% off one of Ash Supply Company's subscription coffee plans. Ash Supply Company, drink coffee, live wild. And as mentioned, the biggest news around the Pistons right now is with the Grand Rapids Drive. The team got a pair of wins over the weekend at home and clinched their first ever G League playoff berth. And they will play Wednesday north of the border against the Raptors 905 and head coach Jerry Stackhouse in a one-game playoff to try to face the Westchester Knicks, who got the bye into the second round there. But obviously bigger and more important than this is the story of Zeke Upshaw. With under a minute to go in Saturday's season finale, Upshaw was on the court playing defense for the Drive, who were in a one-possession game right till the end against Long Island. He went down with a non-contact injury and was unresponsive right away. Later it came out that he had suffered cardiac arrest on the court. According to witnesses, an EMT ran to him right away as the scary scene unfolded in the Deltaplex in Grand Rapids. He was later taken to Spectrum Health Butterworth Hospital in Grand Rapids. Now, on Sunday afternoon, Lorenzo Brown, a former Grand Rapids Drive teammate, and some other G League players were tweeting some RIPs and condolences on social media. But shortly after that, the Drive released a statement, and WOOD-TV's Leon Hendricks in Grand Rapids also quoted Upshaw's mother, saying that the next 24 hours were critical and that those reports were erroneous about the death of Zeke Upshaw. The latest on Upshaw, as I record this very early on Monday morning, was that he's still in critical condition in the hospital. But as I mentioned last week on the podcast, I went and saw my first Drive game when they were playing down here in the Chicago area against the Windy City Bulls. I didn't mention it on the podcast, but I will say that Zeke Upshaw made an impression on me. He was out there well before the tip-off as one of three players shooting three-pointers and getting extra work in with assistant coach George Lynch. Yes, the same George Lynch who beat Michigan with North Carolina in the Chris Webber timeout game in 1993, had a nice career with the 76ers and Allen Iverson as well in the NBA. But anyways, I'm not sure if that work is optional or if different players are assigned to work extra before each game or something like that. But Zeke was out there, and at that point he didn't have his jersey on or anything, but I noticed him. And then later on during the official team warm-ups, I saw him in uniform and put it together that that's who he was. And I looked up all the info on him, did the Google thing with him. He was a stocky guy, 6'6", but he just had a sweet stroke from long range. And of the group that was out there, the two or three other guys, he was obviously a superior shooter than the other ones. So I was kind of wondered if he was just a gunner who was a scorer for them. So I looked up his college stats. He went, played 3 years at Illinois State. He's from Chicago, by the way, Doug Collins' old school, Illinois State. But he ended up at Hofstra for his senior year. Didn't really play hardly at all for the Redbirds at Illinois State. But at Hofstra, he started every game, scored nearly 20 a game in his senior year, his 1 year there. A great season for them. But he's just 26 years old now. Got minutes. He's been with the Grand Rapids for 2 years. Got minutes with the second unit for the Drive this year. Played in every game. He was a rotation guy. He was on the court at the end on Saturday. So obviously trusted by Coach Ryan Kruger and his staff. But then, you know, man, just like that. And I'm drawn to guys who can shoot who might not be the most athletic players. I was that guy as a player way back in the day. But and I don't know enough about Zeke. Maybe he was a better defender than the one game I saw, the one time I ever saw him play. But I kind of pegged him like that just from the short minutes that I saw him play and the just the way he conducted himself on the court, you know, fairly or unfairly. So I was rooting for them. I always root for guys like that. And when I saw he was a guy who got minutes, I was in my mind hoping he would have a nice career as time went on. But then later, as I was waiting after the game off the court for interviews from the Grand Rapids coaches and players that were coming out of the dressing room, I saw the stretcher that is parked kind of near the court there at the Sears Center for Windy City Bulls. Kind of out of sight, but close by if it's ever needed. And I had that fleeting thought. It looks out of place. At first, you look at it and it's, well, you know, what is this thing doing here? But then, of course, it's a pro basketball game. Of course, they should have one there, and you should have one there for every kind of athletic event, especially a high-intensity one like a game of basketball. But then you also have that scary feel. I also had that scary feeling, like, what if this was ever needed in a very serious situation when you see that kind of thing? And obviously a few days later with this very team that I was with, it was needed in a very serious situation. So obviously myself and the whole Lockdown Network, we're sending good thoughts to Zeke and his family. So Zeke Upshaw, we're pulling for him, and sending good wishes to the franchise over with the Grand Rapids Drive as well. And we'll keep you updated on the status of the game on Wednesday, or if there's any new developments as the week goes on here on Locked On Pistons. But we also have today Joe Sinke of PalaceOfPistons.com, the blog. He was at the game on Saturday night. We're going to be talking about the Grand Rapids Drive and Zeke Upshaw as well. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you guys should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. We're listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want to reach men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Okay, and we are now being joined by Joe Sinke of PalaceOfPistons.com, also the host of the Hashtag Pistons podcast. Joe, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, Joe, you've been covering the Grand Rapids Drive for the last part of the season here in the G League, the regular season as it ended on Saturday night. Obviously, as we tape this here on Sunday afternoon, the big news in Detroit Pistons land is everyone's concerned and their thoughts and prayers and whatnot are with Zeke Upshaw, who had the scary scene of cardiac arrest on Saturday night late in the game. You were there covering that game, Joe. Can you talk about what that scene was like at the Deltaplex in Grand Rapids on Saturday night?
Honestly, it was kind of bizarre just because, so obviously it's a big game. If the Drive win, they're in the playoffs. And as it turned out, because the other two teams won, if they had lost, they would have missed it. And there was only like 40 seconds left, I think. And they were playing defense. Like, so really close game, really important game, and a really fun game too. Then, and nobody saw what happened. That was one of the things that made it especially bizarre. Like, when it happened, nobody really had a clue what it was, because he was defending really far away from the ball down in the lower corner up by the three-point line when he collapsed. Like, there were some people I talked to who were sitting literally right there, and they were like, I don't know what happened. I looked over, and he was on the ground. So when it happened initially, most people kind of assumed that he got hit somehow or another, because after the Nets put up the shot, and it was kind of a scramble for the rebound and such, which is understandable because it's a big game right at the end. And so most people assumed, including me at the time, that he got hit or something like that. And obviously then he was on the floor, and it did not take very long to realize that this was not just, you know, he's hurt bad. Like, this was something else somehow or another. You could see he was not moving. He did not move at all when they took him off the floor. Like, they had to lift him up onto the stretcher. I guess it's probably not a stretcher if it's on wheels, but whatever it is, they lifted him up on there and wheeled him off. He didn't move at all. And so it was really a scary scene. And it was especially bizarre because it's like, you know, you're at the very end, sort of the climax of this huge game, you know, really close, big game. And that happens. And it's like, it just made the entire atmosphere of the entire arena was just weird. And because no one knew what happened. That really is the thing that really made it extra weird and scary, is that nobody had any clue what happened. And so they play the last 40 minutes in the Drive win. They're in the playoffs, and they already had it set up that all the players were going to come right back out of the locker room and sign autographs and such, since it was the last game of the year. And so, you know, it's supposed to be this big, really great time, and everyone's just like, we don't know what happened. And you know, when I went back, normally I go back and I interview head coach Ryan Kruger pretty much right after the game and such. And then I sort of hang around the locker rooms for a little bit and talk to some of the players. And it was like nobody knew what had happened. Right as I was about to start interviewing Coach Ryan, he got pulled away by Drive GM John Phelps. I hung around for a little bit. Some of the guys did go out and start to do the autographs and such, because that's kind of what you have to do. But it didn't take very long for me to decide that I was doing nobody any good there, just kind of standing around. So I ended up leaving, but it was just bizarre because nobody had any idea what had happened. And I talked to a guy before I left who was going to stick around, and he said that he'd kind of give me updates. So I heard a lot of different things, and it was very, very scary right away. Then obviously eventually the news report came out that confirmed that he'd gone into cardiac arrest on the floor. Then obviously earlier today we had that sort of bizarre scenario where guys like Lorenzo Brown and some other players started tweeting out rest in peace that he had died, and then the drive release statement that he hasn't died. And so just a bizarre, it was just totally bizarre. And on top of that, just even if it, you know, good news comes and he ends up pulling through, just an absolutely horrible thing because, you know, this was last night should have been, or I suppose by the time this comes out, two nights ago, Saturday night should have been like one of those peaks for, you know, people who are involved with the team, whether it's the players, the coaches, front office guys, like the whole thing. You know, I win a super close game to make the playoffs in the last game of the season, go out, sign autographs, take pictures with all the kids, everything, you know, like that's supposed to be one of the peaks for you as someone who's involved in sports. And that just hung over everything and just really just an awful thing. And obviously you just hope that he pulls through, and you just can't, your heart goes out to his family and everyone involved in the team and the organization.
Yeah, like you said, as we tape this on Sunday afternoon, we are all hoping for the best for Zeke Upshaw, player for the Grand Rapids Drive, and the team will continue on the obviously tough transition to talk about basketball and lighter things, but the Drive on Wednesday will play the Raptors 905 in a single elimination playoff game, the first time that the Drive in their 4 years make it to the postseason. A one-game playoff, I believe, against Coach Jerry Stackhouse and the Raptors 905 on Wednesday. Joe, you've been covering the team closely for at least a few weeks now. Can you describe for the home games that have been going on at the Deltaplex in Grand Rapids? Coach Ryan Kruger on our show a couple days ago talked about how the atmosphere is one of the best in the G League. Can you attest to that and how things are with the fan base and how the players enjoy playing in front of the fans in Grand Rapids?
I can't really compare it to the other places, I admit, because I've never gone to a G League anywhere else. You went to the one in Chicago, I think, right?
At Windy City Bulls. It was you know, more like a high school game than anything else, I would say. A really good game day operations, but just the fans weren't there, and it wasn't like a great atmosphere, basically.
Yeah, it's been pretty good, especially down the stretch. Even before I got credentials to go to the games as a reporter, I went to games with some regularity. I've gone to at least like four or five each of the years that they've been there. So yeah, it's been pretty good, and it's gotten a lot better. I think when they first started, there were a lot of people who didn't even know that there was a team there, to be completely honest about it, I think. And it's gotten a lot better, and particularly the last few games have really actually had pretty good crowds, and they actually get fairly involved in the game and such. So obviously, once again, I haven't been to G League games anywhere else, so I guess I can't speak with any authority on, you know, comparing it to anywhere else. But I've been pretty impressed, especially comparing it to the last couple of years of games. When I go very regularly, it would be largely, and there'd be people there, but not a lot, maybe half full at best. And it just kind of, it'd still be fun, but it definitely has gotten ramped up a little bit over the past, in the games that I've been there this year. And even before I got credentialed towards the end of the year, it was definitely improved. And I think that in a lot of ways, it's just the result of that people, they really know that it's there. And also, I think the level of play in the G League has gotten better over the past few years, too. So, yeah.
And maybe the Drive, some particular prospects that they have, Kay Felder being the guy who comes to mind for the most part as far as an NBA player with Detroit ties, with Detroit Pistons ties, as a two-way player for them as well. But they've got a handful of guys. I was at the game, like you said, the other day. They got McDaniels, who's a guy with an NBA pedigree as well, and a couple guys that you might look for as having a little bit of an NBA future. Who stands out to you when you watch these games?
The biggest guy, other than the two-way players, Kay Felder is one who you mentioned, and the other one is Reggie Hearn right now. So those are the guys who are on two-way contracts. So they obviously stand out. But other than those two, one that always comes to mind is Landry Noko. You know, it's always tough to say how guys' games will translate from the G League to the NBA level, obviously. Very difficult thing to judge. But he really has been impressive. And among the guys who've sort of been there all season, he's pretty consistently been their best player throughout a lot of the year. He really has good defensive instincts going for blocks, and he's got pretty soft touch around the hoop. He obviously wouldn't be as much of a post-up threat in the NBA as he is in the G League, since pretty regularly G League teams play really small guys at center. Like, just as an example, last night the Nets played, I forget what his name was, but they played a guy who's 6'9" at center as their starter. So Landry Noko is consistently the biggest guy out there, but he really has good touch around the rim. He's got good defensive instincts. He's a pretty good athlete. So I would not be surprised if he ends up competing for a roster spot somewhere. Could well be with the Pistons. I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up competing with Eric Moreland in the preseason next year for a roster spot. And so he's the one that really stands out. Another guy also who spent the past preseason with the Pistons is Derek Willis. He doesn't necessarily stand out as being like some stupendous player on the G League level like some guys do. He only scores about 12 points a game, but he's tall and he can shoot, and I'm pretty impressed by the way he defends. Oftentimes, he's not a stopper, but he moves his feet well. He's got good length. And if you're tall and can shoot, you always are going to, there's a pretty good chance that you'll get your chance in the league, especially if you can defend at any sort of a respectable level. So I wouldn't be surprised if either of those guys got a shot sooner rather than later. And, you know, there's some other guys that I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up getting some sort of a chance at some point through a 10-day contract or whatever. You mentioned KJ McDaniels. I'm honestly a little surprised he didn't get a 10-day contract somehow this year. He's offensively limited. He's still shooting only like 30% from three with the drive. He is just, his athleticism is legitimately a game changer. You can just see when he's on the floor and other teams get out onto the fast break, there is a visible and palpable fear that KJ McDaniels is going to come out of nowhere and just block them. And he makes some really big plays consistently. He's a lot of fun to have around. So I'm glad he didn't get a 10-day contract, because he's a lot of fun to watch in Grand Rapids. But so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another shot. I wouldn't be totally shocked if a couple other guys got a shot, like Jamel Morris is a good shooter. Kenneth Smith, Speedy Smith is what he goes by. He's a really good defender, really good passer. But the main two that I would say really stand out, other than the two-way players, are Landry Noko and Derek Willis, just because they seem like the kind of guys that they have the right combination of, they're big, strong, and athletic enough and skilled enough that they may actually have a pretty good chance to translate. And it makes sense because they're the two guys that are affiliate players, so they both spent the preseason with the Pistons before ending up with the drive.
So we're talking to Joe Sinke. You can find him on Twitter at @Joe_truck. Joe, I came across your stuff on the Detroit Pistons subreddit on Reddit there, and I've always kind of talked about, like, Facebook is kind of like the most casual of fans. It's the Pistons or really any topic out there. And then Twitter, maybe a little bit more fun and loose and a little bit more in depth. But then you got Reddit, which is like the super fans for the most part. Can you, like, and a lot of your I came across your podcast on there and some of your Detroit Pistons game recaps as well. Would that kind of be accurate as far as my description for the levels of Pistons fandom on the internet out there?
I would say it's probably fairly accurate. And obviously it's a spectrum with any of them. So, you know, it's not every single person who's on the Pistons subreddit is a super fan necessarily. But the main thing I would say is sort of how intentional it has to be. So, like, there's lots of people who have a Twitter and they use their Twitter for, you know, whatever it is you use your Twitter for, like all sorts of stuff. And then they happen to talk about Pistons games. If you're doing stuff on the Pistons subreddit, it's generally because you're there for the Pistons. So it's sort of just another step out of the way, I guess you could say. But, you know, just Reddit is an interesting place. That's kind of where I come from as far as, a basketball writer, I guess. That's where I started. I one day just decided on my own, I'm going to write recaps and such for the Pistons on subreddit I literally just decided to do it one day. And I started before the season, I guess 3 years ago, the year that they made the playoffs a couple years ago. That's how I got my start. So it's really it's mostly a good community. There's times where the negativity can get pretty overwhelming. There is no way around that. They are not the most positive bunch on Reddit. You know, it's mostly a good thing. And as long as you're willing to wade through a certain amount of just kind of crap at times, you can definitely, there's a lot of really good stuff there. And mostly it is just people who are pretty passionate about the team. You get a lot of, we've got several people right now who are pretty consistently putting up original content, which is great. When I first started doing my stuff, I was really the only one who's doing that with any consistency. Now I've got two or three other people that pretty consistently do it. I've had them on my podcast several times at various points, and it's just, it's mostly a good community. It is at times overwhelmingly negative, which can be frustrating, but it's mostly a good thing though. And I'd say, yeah, it's probably where the more hardcore fans end up, as opposed to just Twitter or Facebook, just because Reddit just sort of lends itself to that, where it's just tends to be, your answers can be longer, you can argue more with people, it's just easier, it lends itself to that.
So if there's any Pistons fans out there listening, ready to take their fandom to the next level, like you said, I'll vouch for a little bit of the negativity that they have on there, but also, like you said, the fandom. I mean, you had Mike on your podcast recently. He does the posts about, I thought you had the Andre Drummond and spacing issues with Blake Griffin and whatnot. He obviously knows, he's a very knowledgeable fan and knows a lot about what he's talking about. The guys like that are kind of all over the place on Twitter. On Reddit as well. So check it out there if you're not already on Reddit. And you, like I said, you can find Joe Sinke on Joe_truck on Twitter as well, however you want to get your Pistons news. So Joe, anything else you want to plug as you kind of look ahead to the off season for the Pistons and also the playoff run for the Drive coming up?
For the Drive, I'll first off obviously say just keep the whole team and obviously Zeke Upshaw in your thoughts and prayers, or whatever it is you do, you know, do it for them. It is not just, I'm not just saying, I tweeted out a couple of days ago that, you know, it's not hyperbole to say it. This year's team is really a good group of guys, and not just the players, but the coaches. I showed up literally towards the end of the season. I'm basically just a fat white guy who came from nowhere, and every interaction I've had,
that's me too.
Every interaction I've had with every single person, whether it's the players, coaches, the front office guys, whatever, the PR people, every single one has been absolutely lovely. I mean, it's just a great group of decent human beings. And just keep them in your thoughts. Obviously, that's way bigger than basketball. And then as far as basketball goes, hey, watch the game. Obviously, they're not in Grand Rapids, so you won't, unless you want to hike up to Canada for a G League game, which would be a bit extreme, but they stream all of the games on Twitch or Facebook. So watch the game. It'll probably be fun. It's a pretty fun team to watch right now. And yeah, that's what I'd say about that. And with Pistons, just trying to have a little bit of patience. It's hard to make the sort of adjustments when you have that much roster overturn in the middle of the season and you're doing it with your backup point guard who can't shoot, even if he started to shoot a little bit now. But yeah, so just have at least a little bit of patience there. But you know, I've been preaching that all season and people don't really listen to me so much on that.
All right. Well, Joe, thanks for the time. Let's talk more Pistons and Drive this summer as the off season approaches.
All right. Thank you.
As far as the NBA club, I don't have a whole lot to say about this one, but the Pistons did win 117-95 on Saturday. Anthony Tolliver, a career-high 25 points. Salute to AT, friend of the Lockdown Pistons podcast. 13 threes for the team in the first half, and if it wasn't for a cold third and fourth quarter from beyond the arc, the Pistons might have tied the franchise record for threes that they sent earlier this season. They finished one behind with 16 three-pointers made. 15 for Reggie Jackson in his third game back, extending him out to 22 minutes. Somehow, despite the blowout, Andre Drummond still played 36 minutes, 15 points, and 20 rebounds. And likewise, somehow, Stan Van Gundy and his staff only found 3 minutes for Henry Ellenson at the end of the game and 3 minutes for point guard Dwight Bikes as well. Still talking about the playoff picture, the Bucks beat the Spurs on Sunday, so the tragic number for the Pistons is now 4, and when lined up with Milwaukee, with 9 games left for the Bucks and 9 for Detroit, so 18 chances to get those 4 negative results for the Pistons, being obviously wins for Milwaukee or losses for Detroit. The tragic number in terms of against Miami, who is now in the 8th spot of the Eastern Conference playoffs behind the Bucks by a half a game, is 3, so obviously the Pistons have a still better chance of getting past the Bucks because they own the tiebreaker against the Bucks and do not have the tiebreaker against Miami. So that half game lead is actually still one half game easier for the Pistons to match the Bucks. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I know what I'm talking about anyway. But the Heat lost on Sunday to the Pacers in overtime. So 8 games left for the Heat, 9 for Detroit, 17 chances to get to that tragic number of 3 in terms of bad results for the Pistons. The Bucks are at the Clippers on the road, the West Coast, on Tuesday, and the Heat will host the Cleveland Cavaliers on Tuesday. So tough matchups, while the Pistons have the Lakers at home in a game that they're favored by 4.5 points. So maybe the Pistons can skate for a few more days without losing any more of the small amount of hope they have of making the playoffs the rest of the year. Tonight, the Pistons, like I said, play in the Lakers. A lot of history between these two teams, but not for a long time has it been relevant. A 7 o'clock tip at Little Caesars Arena. The Pistons have a half-game lead over the Lakers in the standings, but below them by a half game if you're talking about it in tankathon terms. So this could be a one for ping pong, big one for ping pong ball positioning. It doesn't matter head to head with teams out west for draft purposes. Only thing that matters is record, because they're not doing tiebreakers between teams outside of the conferences. But Kyle Kuzma from Flint, the rookie, leads the Lakers. They snapped a 4-game losing streak on Saturday, and fellow rookie Lonzo Ball, maybe you've heard of him, getting big minutes lately as well. Isaiah Thomas, not that Isaiah Thomas, but the Lakers' Isaiah Thomas, he will not play. He's injured, and Brandon Ingram has missed 11 straight and probably won't play as well. The Duke former Duke player who was the second pick in the draft behind Ben Simmons, he had a breakout season going in the second half of this year before going down with the growing injury. So, but be sure to check out Ash Supply Company in downtown Detroit at one of their two locations, or visit their website, Ash Supply Company, ASHE Supply Co.com, to order your monthly subscription of Detroit's best coffee. They're supporting this podcast, so we need to support them. Use promo code LOCKED, LOCKED, at checkout when ordering a subscription online, and you will get 20% off your subscription. Ash Supply Company, drink coffee, live wild. So give us a follow on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons Matt Shook. I want to thank Joe Sinke for joining us and talking about the Grand Rapids Drive. And to all the listeners, thanks for listening, and enjoy the Lonzo Ball show tonight. And we'll talk to you all again very soon.